This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Shariz Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. It is 7.06 in the morning, Monday the 22nd of July. And taking a look at some Asian stocks and how they closed on Friday, they rose after New York Federal Reserve President John Williams made a speech on Thursday cementing expectations of a US interest rate cut later this month. The Nikkei ended higher by 2%. Hang Seng was up 1.1%. Shanghai's composite was also up 0.8%. And the STI was also up by 0.5%. But back home, the KLCI was up 0.6%.
Yeah, so more on what President Federal Reserve President John Williams said, that policymakers could not wait for an economic disaster to hit before adding stimulus, which many interpreted as a strong argument in favor of quick monetary action. So the comments by William made it virtual certainty that Fed would cut interest rate by 25 basis points as its July 30 to the 31st policy meeting.
Now, that wasn't enough to satisfy the U.S. market, though, because U.S. stocks closed lower Friday following a report that said that the Federal Reserve's officials would cut interest rates by a quarter percentage point rather than a half-point move. As a result, the Dow closed lower by 0.3%, S&P closed lower down 0.6%, while the Nasdaq ended lower by 0.7%.
So for some thoughts on where the Fed monetary policy is heading, we have on the line with us Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer with Jevons Global in Sydney. Thank you for joining us, Kingsley. Now, with unemployment, wages and inflation at a healthy level, it looks more likely that the Fed will only cut by 25 basis points at its July meeting. How do you think the markets will react when half of the street is expecting a more aggressive cut of 50 bips?
Well, I think the equity market's likely to respond positively to any rate cuts. The bond market, however, might pause a little depending on the size of that cut. The bond market's really been pricing a possible recession in the US, which has been evidenced by the long-term yield in the US on government bonds for 10 years, they're called, the yield there being lower than the three-month rate. Now, ordinarily, if that continues for some time, like possibly more than 3 or 4 months, then there's a good chance that you might have a recession coming down the turnpike, possibly in late next year. So obviously, we'll be watching closely what the bond market does in response to the Fed's moves. I think, however, the equity market is a little more optimistic at this stage because investors are pricing how these low bond yields affect the valuation of companies. And the companies we might see do better in this environment are those with relatively stable earnings that are not exposed to the trade wars. So that'd be companies like McDonald's, Microsoft and others. So we'll be watching closely the earnings reports to see how to play this going forward.
And Kingsley, gold just wrapped up its best week since 2016, hitting a new 2019 high on Thursday. Has the easy money been made, or do you see more upside for this precious metal?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, that gold has been not very active for some years now. It's really been trading in a tight range. But we've just really moved out of that. And gold, I think, is one of those assets that obviously it's sometimes favoured by the pessimists in the sense that it tends to be driven upwards by risk aversion in markets concerning the possibility of a prolonged trade war, and then also this risk that we get a bit of a currency war, meaning competitive devaluations between all the major currencies. So I think that's what's supporting gold in the short term. Whether it goes on for a long time, I guess, depends on those economic conditions, but also the attitude of some of the major players in this market. Now, central banks, they own a significant portion of outstanding gold reserves worldwide, and it's noteworthy that Russia is one of those central banks that's been actively buying gold these past few years. So I think, if you look at that situation, Australian dollar gold is already at record highs, and we'd expect US dollar gold probably will make new highs within 2 years.
And the Conservative Party will announce a new leader and PM this Tuesday. As this is Boris Johnson's race to lose, what will his premiership mean for the UK economy as it negotiates its Brexit terms?
Well, Boris Johnson seems set on Brexit with or without a deal. So there is a risk now, given that he seems highly likely to become the next PM, that you might get a disorderly Brexit. Now, that, I think, would put significant downward pressure on sterling, the currency. And in the short term, we may see markets sell off as some of the more mobile international capital just steps back from buying UK assets. However, you know, if you did get a rout in the pound, that means that British competitiveness will be improved, and some of those listed assets might be good buys down the track. It's just that it's too early to tell, and I think perhaps that you'll see international investors only step up to the plate if they see a significant discount in UK assets. That hasn't happened yet, so I think it's really wait see for now, and we'll just come back to the UK markets later this year and have a good look.
Thank you so much, Kingsley. And that was Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer with Jevons Global in Sydney, weighing in on the Fed as well as gold and the latest happenings in the UK, because Boris Johnson is looking to have quite the baptism of fire in terms of diplomacy if or when he takes office this week, because not only does he have a Brexit hanging over his head, but he's also going to be dealing with tensions between the UK and Iran, which appear to be escalating. Now, on Friday, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard seized a British-flagged ship, the Stena Impero, in the Strait of Hormuz after Tehran said that it was violating international maritime rules.
Yeah, so this comes 2 weeks after the Royal Marines helped seize Iranian tanker Grace 1 off Gibraltar because of evidence it was carrying oil to Syria in breach of EU sanctions. So UK Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt said that Grace 1 was detained legally, but Iran has said that this was piracy and threatened to seize a British oil tanker in retaliation, which they seem to have done.
Now, the UK has accused Iran of unacceptable and highly escalatory action in a letter to the President of the United Nations Security Council. Iran's Foreign Minister Javad Zarif also tweeted that the UK must cease being an accessory to hashtag economic terrorism of the US. He said that Iran guarantees the security of the Gulf and the Straits of Hormuz and insisted that its actions would uphold international maritime rule.
So relations have been deteriorating significantly between Iran as well as the UK and the US. In April, the US tightened sanctions it had reimposed on Iran after withdrawing from the 2015 nuclear deal. And the US has also blamed Iran for attacks on tankers since May, which Tehran has denied. Now, on Friday, the US claims to have also destroyed an Iranian drone in the Gulf. The UK government has remained committed to the same nuclear deal, which curbs Iran's nuclear activities in return for the lifting of sanctions. But with this Iranian tanker, the Iran seizing of the tanker Grace 1, it's also been a bit of a hot button topic there in the Strait of Hormuz.
That's right. So U.S. economic terrorism hashtag, yeah? That's interesting.
Well, we have seen that in oil prices inching up, right, mm-hmm. as a result of all these tensions. Oil now is $63 a barrel on a year-to-date basis. It's actually up 15%. Just not long ago, last week, it was only hovering around at the high 50 levels. So we can expect, despite the global trade, the slowdown and concerns that even inventories in US are up, any geopolitical tensions will continue to drive oil prices up.
Yes, I think there have been some discussions about expectations that Brent crude will hover at about the 68 to 70 level in the near future on these geopolitical risks. But taking a look also at Japan, we've had some international headlines on the Eastern Front as well. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's ruling coalition, they've won a clear majority in elections to Japan's upper house, but they are expected to fall short of securing a supermajority. Now, half of the members of the upper house are elected every 3 years, and there are 124 seats up for grabs this year. And the results have cemented the status quo in Japanese politics, with Mr. Abe's government now firmly in charge of both houses of parliament.
So the coalition has a two-third majority in the lower house, which it won in 2017. And he is now all but certain to go ahead with the rise in consumption tax from the 8 to 10% this autumn. So, however, the lack of this supermajority in the upper house will mean that efforts to change the country constitutions are not that straightforward anymore.
Yeah, Abe wants to add wording that makes explicit the legality of Japan's self-defense forces. This document has remained unchanged since it was enacted in the aftermath of World War II. Now, the interesting thing would be actually his ability to push the GST property tax from 8 to 10%, because as we know, the Japanese economy has not been the best. Mm-hmm. Consumption has been sluggish. But I think he's taking advantage of the fact that we're going to have Olympics in Japan, Tokyo 2020. So he does see a boost in terms of consumption. So he thinks that perhaps if I push it to 8 to 10%, it wouldn't be so negative for the economy. Because if you look at the historical example, whenever they shifted GST up, you do see GDP actually come down for the next two quarters. So, you know, it'll be a tough balancing act for him, especially when there is this overall backdrop of slowing global growth.
Yes, and the other interesting thing about Shinzo Abe is that he's always been pushing for Japan to take a more forthright stance on the international stage, particularly with regard to military strategy. So how he's going to push, whether or not he's going to be able to push through this through now that his party has control of both houses of parliament, that's going to be very interesting to watch. Now, the other thing that's been happening in Hong Kong is that protests in Hong Kong have turned violent once again yesterday. Riot police fired tear gas to disperse demonstrators who'd earlier surrounded China's main local government office in the city. Now, the Hong Kong government have said that protesters hurled petrol bombs and bricks and set fires during the clashes. And the violence took place hours after a peaceful march against the now suspended bill to allow extraditions to mainland China.
Yeah, so at the same time, elsewhere in the city, a group of men dressed in apparently white shirts and wielding sticks attacked subway commuters seemingly without any provocation, leaving people bloodied and injured in their wake. So, I mean, this is unfortunate, isn't it? Hong Kong has been going on for quite some time now. It does sound like it is escalating. And, you know, now we have injured people in the list as well.
Yeah, I think the other question is whether or not this, because you are seeing this escalation in tensions being put forward by a subsection of the movement, whether or not this escalation in tensions and violence, increasing violence, is going to divide the political movement against China's interference in Hong Kong's sovereignty. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.